So Sarah Hickson, you were here at the Galway International Arts Festival, and we're here at the Festival Gallery at the Connacht Printworks, and your exhibition Sounds Unseen is currently on, and is a really powerful statement. Can you just tell us about your photographic exhibition and its contents and story?
Well, the exhibition that's here is called Sounds Unseen, and it's a personal visual photographic narrative that I made as a result of a project I was involved in called the Calais Sessions, which was a collaborative music project that took place in the refugee camps in northern France during a nine-month period in 2015 and 2016. In the camp that became known as the Jungle in Calais, and another camp a little bit up the road in Dunkirk called La Grande Sainte. And it was a very simple principle behind the project, which was to take musicians based in the UK and an array of musical instruments and some sound equipment, and to go to the camps and set up a temporary recording studio and to find musicians in the camp from amongst all the different nationalities and people living there who'd found themselves stranded in Calais and Dunkirk, and invite them to come and play and make music and share music and tell their stories through music. And then we made an album out of those recordings.
So as a photographic exhibition or as a visual arts exhibition, it has its origins in a music project. So the Calais Sessions themselves, can you describe what they set out to do? It's obviously based in the jungle camp of Calais itself. Can you describe the musicians you meet and the types of music they play and maybe the experience you found going there and hearing the music firsthand and live?
Well, obviously we didn't really know who we were going to meet. We didn't know quite what the reaction was going to be, but it was very clear from the first visits that we made that there was an extraordinary amount of talent in the jungle, an extraordinary amount of people who played instruments, who sang, who wanted to share the music of their homeland. Obviously that's a very significant way of staying in contact with what you've left behind. And there were a lot of people there that, despite the horrendous conditions, obviously the thing you find when you went into those camps, and the first time I went was December 2015, freezing cold, raining, thick mud on the ground, tents kind of slipping into the mud, makeshift wooden shelters, tarpaulins draped over everything, miserable, miserable conditions. But within that, an extraordinary sense of a need to build some kind of community and society. And so through the centre of the camp, there was this string of bustling cafes and shops and barbers and places to hang out and drink tea and have home-cooked food from Afghanistan or Pakistan or wherever people had come from. And the range of nationalities and cultures there was huge, you know, ranging from Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, Sudan, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Kurdistan, huge numbers of people, many of whom had never lived side by side before. So that created its own set of problems. But what was interesting was that through music, where music becomes the communicator and the connector, a lot of those differences are put aside. And language doesn't matter so much, music becomes the language with which we communicate.
I mean, what you've just described is perhaps a completely unknown side of life to what people generally may know of life being like in the camps. Mm-hmm. We see it daily or weekly on our news reports, and it's a very distinctive picture of existence. But you've portrayed through your exhibition the existence of resilience, and you've created order out of chaos. Cafes, libraries, classrooms, and as a photographer, do you see yourself going in there as an artist or as a, I think an interesting line on your exhibition is called a memoir, a personal memoir. Mm-hmm. Do you find this an exhibition of, is it your story coming away from Calais, or perhaps the story of the people who lived there, or perhaps both?
I think it's a mixture. Yeah. I mean, the thing that I was looking for and the thing that drew me to working with the Calais Sessions as a project rather than going into the camp, I had no desire to go to the camp simply as a photographer to document as in a more voyeuristic way, if you like. What interested me about this project and what interests me generally as a photographer is being part of a community, being inside something over a period of time where you can really build up trust with people you're photographing, have a deeper understanding of the situation that you are part of and that you're trying to portray, and then looking within that for those moments of connection, of poetry, of empathy, and within one two-dimensional image being able to portray something of the feeling that it was to be there, that moment of connection, of joy, of shared experience that we found when we were in the camps, but also not trying to sugarcoat it and not trying to say, well, actually everything was wonderful and all you need to do is to give somebody a drum and everything's okay. You know, it's not as simple as that. Of course it's not. So really trying to kind of show the context in which the project happened, but also looking at individual stories, because a lot of the information that came out about the camps that people saw in the newspapers and in the mass media and on the television were very broad brush generalized and talked in very dehumanizing ways about the people who had the unfortunate experience of finding themselves there. People were talked about as swarms, as hordes, as masses, and were spoken about in very threatening ways. And this was a way for us to actually say, look, these are people like you and me, and they've come from families. A lot of them had good education, had a profession, were students, were working hard, wanted to contribute, wanted to continue doing that, and were fleeing their lives. We were fleeing persecution, war-torn zones, conflict areas, and had no choice.
I think it's very poignant, you see, how it's represented is in a dehumanizing manner. And I think what your photographs do is the opposite, to rehabilitate these societies with a new sense of life and energy. I mean, so many of the images are of musicians playing music. I mean, is that something that the exhibition was set out to do? Was the music rather than the people in some ways? Or it's people with instruments in a lot of the photographs?
Yeah, I mean, what you can see in this exhibition, there is one large collage which fills the wall, which contains about 120 individual images. It's broadly chronological, but not precisely. But what I discovered as I was playing with those images and trying to make sense of that and trying to decide which images to include in that large collage, as opposed to the 15 larger individual images on the opposite wall, was that there was something that emerged with the colour and the atmosphere as we get into the section where there's the activity and the musicians playing and the conversation and the engagement and the community around the project. There's a warmth that's created not only by the expressions and the activity that's happening, but the light and the feeling of those images. Whereas as you move towards the end of it, as the camp started to be dismantled and bulldozed, you get a much kind of cooler, distant, remote, inhospitable environment and colour and sense.
You approach the story, I think, from a very unique angle. I think even the title gives that sense. It sounds unseen. The images we see, as I've mentioned in our news, we are very familiar with them and they're set in a distinct way. The sounds that you hear, are they blends of various cultures coming together? Is there a Calais sound? Is there a jungle sound?
In musical terms, not particularly, no. I mean, the album that we finally released includes very different kinds of musics from different traditions, different languages, different places, different cultures, deliberately. Some of it is very traditional and is a solo singer from a Badoon from Kuwait singing this long lament about his personal story, totally unaccompanied, sang for about 15 minutes. It's the most extraordinary thing. And you can see his picture in the exhibition. So it ranges from that kind of very personal story, talking about how he was betrayed by his best friend and had to flee and how he misses his motherland, to more contemporary versions of collaborations between a young rapper from Afghanistan and some musicians from the UK, or a choir from the Ethiopian church and members of a gospel choir from the UK. So very, very varied.
And we're in the festival gallery right now, so we can hear people milling around. How people engage with the exhibition, as an artist, as a photographer, an exhibition curator, coming to something like this, your own work, are you interested to see how people engage, maybe what images they stop at? Is that something you take cognizance of?
I love it, yes. I mean, it's been wonderful to spend as much time in Galway as I've been able to, actually, to be part of not only the installation here, which is quite different to how we made it when it was premiered in New York last year, but also to be around the space in a festival context where there are lots of people coming through and there are two other amazing exhibitions in this gallery. So people are exposed to very kind of sociable and engaging environment, and it's fantastic. People have been writing to me, people have been talking to me in the gallery, asking questions, thanking me for it. So that's very rewarding and very nice to be around and to see that people are really looking.
Yeah, and you said just there about the premiere of this exhibition in New York. Can you talk about its reception there? I mean, obviously in a very particular context in America, politics and culture right now, where there is perhaps camps of a very different type or perhaps a very similar type springing up unexpectedly and having tragic consequences. Could you talk about its reception or how was it met?
Yes, well, it was commissioned, the exhibition was commissioned and produced originally by St. Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn, which is essentially a theatre performing arts venue in Dumbo. And Susan Feldman, the artistic director, who I've known for quite a long time, had originally seen some of my pictures from the Calais sessions as I was putting them out there on some social media accounts. And she was immediately struck by them and moved by them and said that she was not as aware of what was going on in northern France as she should have been, and was seeing my images and realizing what was going on, and was also very aware that a lot of people in New York and America more widely had no idea that these camps were in northern France. So this was in the beginning of 2017 when we first started talking about this exhibition. So Trump had been elected, you know, a few months before, so there was a very particular context in which she wanted to present the exhibition. And what really struck me there was when we were writing a piece about it, was having to acknowledge that people didn't know what was going on in Europe. People have seen images of people arriving in boats, people drowning off the coast of Turkey and Greece, but they weren't really aware of what happened to people then trying to make the journey across Europe, and more to the point, why they were heading to Calais, why there would be a camp in Calais, and where Calais was in relation to the UK. So it was important to explain that and talk about that, and I did quite a lot of talks with young people and community organisations, and we had some really interesting discussions about that.
And again, as part of the Arts Festival, and indeed later today, you're part of a panel discussion as part of the Arts Festival, the first series of talks, which is set to the theme of home. Mm. So you can see the particular resonances there, of course. Is that something you're going to address later? Have you a set, perhaps, response you'd like to accompany or contextualize your exhibition with on that theme of home?
Yes, I think we're going to talk about all sorts of things this afternoon, actually. Also about what happens when people arrive in the UK, when they manage to get there through whatever means, and something around the asylum process and people being held in detention, and what it actually means to have made that incredibly arduous, dangerous, challenging journey across Europe. All those borders, all those challenges, all those obstacles for young people, mostly young people arriving in the UK, then what happens next, and what happens, the reality of being so far away from home and having to build your home somewhere else, and what obstacles are in your way at that point.
Yeah. The theme of home obviously is kind of counter to the question of migration. It's a sense of looking or ever looking for a home or establishing a home. In terms of the contents of your exhibition and the jungle, so much has been removed now and bulldozed at the jungle, and there's obviously displacement of the people who were there.
Yep.
Has that struck you since your exhibition has now been completed, or your own work has been completed there? Is there a follow-on piece that may develop, or how do you respond to that?
There may be. I haven't been back to Calais since the camp was demolished. There are still about 1,500 displaced people living rough in the area, and there's still a great need for support. And in fact, that's referenced as there's a theatre show in London at the moment called The Jungle, made by Joe Murphy and Joe Robertson, who were the creators of the Good Chance Theatre in the Calais refugee camp in the jungle. And there's a reference in that right at the end of the show where they actually interview on television. It's like a television news report, and somebody coming from Calais talking about how many refugees there are still living there. So the situation is ongoing. I've done, since I made the exhibition for here, I've been working in taking photographs with an organisation called Clowns Without Borders, who work with children in crisis in areas of the world, different areas of the world, and we went to Serbia and northern Greece and worked with theatre, physical visual theatre, and workshops with children, particularly looking at the fact that children in those situations lose their right to be children. So I did an exhibition in London called Displaced Connections around that.
Okay, so that's interesting. In your own history as an artist, is it always photography? I mean, I think your images as of here are so interdisciplinary. It's music, it's theatre, it's all these sorts of various elements of performance. So is that something you've been cognizant of developing your own work as a photographer and documenter?
It is very much so. I actually had a previous career as a producer in the performing arts. So I've always worked with artists. I've always been involved in theatre and music and opera, and particularly the impact of the arts in a wider context. And I've always been interested in that and worked in a variety of contexts, whether that's around music and theatre and workshops and young people and how to engage and how to create and the importance of creativity in education. So I'm really interested in that, and I think that's informed my work as a photographer.
I think the power of these documentation projects as exhibitions as well is that we are of course talking here for the oral history project of the Galway International Arts Festival. Archives are powerful statements. It's documenting and recording and ultimately making public stories of the present for the future. Is something that's come into your other work about documentation as power?
Yes, I've just started working with a performance artist called Marisa Garefa, and we're working together on a project that looks very specifically, I think, at the intersection between photography and photographs as objects, and the idea of photographing and layering things up with live performance and ritual performance and memory and archive, if you like. So we started work together earlier this summer on a residency. It's a project called Traces, where we're looking at physical memory and traces of memory and what happens to those ideas and those objects, and how in a kind of ritual performance sense we can explore those and how photography can engage with that process. Yeah. So,
okay. And these traces of memory you mentioned as well is a fascinating point to develop, because as photographs, I believe at least, there is no testimony or written memories from the residents of the camps. It's the photographs, it's immediate, and it's the image is the story. So was it a conscious decision not to record or document or write any testimony from the inhabitants, or you wanted to let the images speak for themselves?
From my perspective, yes. The Calais Sessions project more broadly, on their website there are statements and recordings, and there are some videos that we play where you see some of the people that we were working with there talking about their experiences. But from a photographic perspective, yes, I was really interested in selecting a set of images that spoke as images. Obviously, I've written a text which kind of contextualizes the exhibition, but I didn't want to label each image. I wanted those to be seen as a set of images that told the narrative visually themselves.
The exhibition here at the Connacht Printworks, we're in the second and final week, and in the final weekend of the Arts Festival itself. The gallery is packed right now, it's very busy. Is there a particular message you'd like to think that audiences or viewers of your exhibition might take away from it? Is there a lasting piece or thought you might like?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that people would come away from the exhibition with some thoughts, with perhaps a view changed, or a sense that people who choose to migrate or have to migrate or have to seek a better life because of the dangerous situation that they're leaving behind, that could be any of us. It could be our parents, it could be our brothers, our sisters, it could have been us if we were born somewhere else, and to not jump to conclusions about what those people's stories are, and to seek out people who are in those situations and be hospitable and generous and friendly. And
to end on. So thank you so much for talking to us today, Sarah Hickson.
Thank you.